My name is Petra Haller, and today I am speaking with Colette Lemon, curator of exhibitions at the Iroquois Indian Museum. Colette, thank you so much for speaking with me today. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Could you start off by telling us about the Iroquois Museum and what it is that you do there?
The museum was established about 38 years ago. We are a private nonprofit, which basically means that we do not receive any designated state, county, or federal funds. We raise all our funds. The idea behind the museum started with the idea that the Iroquois or Haudenosaunee contemporary arts could serve as a window into the culture itself. And that was really the foundation for the idea of starting this museum. And so now we've been around for 38 years, which in nonprofit history is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And we are about 40-45 minutes from Albany, out near Cobleskill. We have an archaeological component to our exhibitions, and we also have a large changing main gallery which focuses on the contemporary arts, and that changes every year with a mini exhibit slotting into one section of that also every year. We do artist demonstrations, we do dance and spoken word. Basically, we bring artists to the museum to present those art forms. And the museum was founded when it started, really, and you look back to the late 1970s when the idea, the germ for this idea started. Nobody was really looking at Haudenosaunee art. If anyone was interested in Native art, it was really this very strong focus on the Southwest, and the Native tribes east of the Mississippi were not really recognized in terms of the arts. And when our collection began, it was really something very different, and the work was not being collected, not being researched, not being looked at. So, I mean, thankfully, that has changed dramatically over the years and is not the case today. So we're kind of forerunners in that respect. And my job, my responsibility at the museum here, I'm the curator of exhibitions, which means that I develop and research concepts for our changing contemporary art exhibits. And I work directly with Haudenosaunee artists in New York and Canada and those who live off-reservation in urban areas all over the United States and Canada. Basically, my role is to create a receptive platform for Haudenosaunee artists to speak about the issues that are relevant to themselves and to their lives today. So I feel like I just create this platform and I get out of the way. And that's kind of how I see my role. We are a very small museum. We have a really dedicated, talented staff, but we're only a handful of folks. And so all of us here wear multiple hats. So in addition to working on the exhibitions, I also write a lot of our grants, and I develop a lot of our programming, our public programming. I also develop activities for the children's level of the museum, which echo the messages that we're trying to put forth on the upper level or changing exhibits, but translate those down to, you know, a family level or a child's level as best we can using interactive things. We create our exhibits in-house from the ground up, which is really, really challenging, but it also gives us all, I think, a great feeling of investment in pride when it goes well in our exhibitions.
I'm very curious about an exhibition that you curated last year in 2018, Tonto, Teepees, and Totem Poles, Considering Native American Stereotypes in the 21st Century. What were the inspirations behind this exhibition, and how did it all come together?
We had actually, the Iroquois Museum had done an exhibit on stereotypes with artist Tom Huff back in the early 1990s. We just kind of decided it was time to revisit that subject 25 years later and see what, if anything, had changed in terms of the stereotypes that people have around Native people. And what we found, of course, is that some of the old stereotypes that I grew up with that were very prevalent in the 1950s and 60s have disappeared, which is wonderful. However, new ones, new stereotypes had taken their place. And where we were really looking at that, we were seeing just observation of visitors coming to our museum or calling on the phone, asking questions. And we were starting to get a sense that there were a lot of assumptions about Native people, about Haudenosaunee people. So we're in the 50s, there was this idea that Native people were poor, poor Indians. Now it is the total reverse, where a lot of foreign visitors come here and they have this assumption that all Native people are very, very wealthy, that they pay no taxes, that because they avail themselves of modern conveniences, that means that they're somehow less Native or that they do not keep their traditions. So we see that with our visitors, and we always work to try to, as much as possible, correct that and you know, allow our staff that are Haudenosaunee to try to put that in perspective so it's more accurate. We also wanted to address something that we were seeing when we were out in Haudenosaunee reservation communities, and that was this other side of that, is that the stereotypes are often generated and perpetuated within Native communities themselves, which is something that is seldom discussed, and it was a really interesting component of that, where if you go to some of the communities, you will see, in any of the fourth graders will tell you, of course, that Haudenosaunee people never lived in a teepee. They did not wear full feather headdresses, that those belong to the nations in the West. However, if you go to those communities in conjunction with tourist shops and craft shops and restaurants, you will see teepees. You will see totem poles from the West Coast, all sorts of things that are very specific to other nations that are not Haudenosaunee. There are also Indian princess contests at powwows. It's kind of something that goes back a long ways, but it's still done today. We wanted to really include that other side of it, which is a much more complex look at stereotyping. And so we reached out to a number of artists and just basically asked the artists to create response pieces to the idea of stereotyping, either from the outside or from the inside. And that became the body of our exhibit.
So to dig into that a little bit deeper, why would you say that it's important to challenge those stereotypes?
Generalizations about any group of people are just counterproductive to building any sense of community. And it seems that the current environment about stereotypical attitudes, it makes it even more acceptable than it was in the past. And so I think, you know, it ended up being a very timely exhibit for that reason, because we really had the opportunity to dismantle some of these stereotypes, which can be very destructive because of their inaccuracies. And Native people actually experience a larger diversity and the broadest range of stereotypes of any ethnic group. And it goes from one extreme to the other, from these overly romanticized stereotypes about, you know, everyone being very knowledgeable about spiritual aspects or medicinal plants or the wisdom of the past kind of idea and this, you know, overly romantic fantasy, to extremely negative sorts of stereotypes about life on Iroquois reservations and drug dealing and smuggling and all of those sorts of stereotypes. And both of those extremes are very problematic because they're very distorted from the reality of what it means to be Haudenosaunee.
Thank you for that response. What can you tell us about the current exhibition, Treasured Traditions, A Statement of Place?
You know, last year was the stereotype exhibit, and that was very controversial, and we really did want to get people riled up. We decided to step back this year and do something that was a little more traditional, just to keep it fresh. And so what we did is we looked at four Haudenosaunee communities and five different art traditions within those communities, two which were very old, beadwork and stone carving, which have been continuously practiced in those specific communities, and two art forms that were brought back from the point of extinction or near extinction, and that would be traditional pottery and basket making at one particular reservation where it had pretty much died out, and one new tradition, which is quilt making at Akwesasne, which is basically grew out of a totally non-Native tradition, which the Mohawks up there have totally taken and turned it into a tradition that speaks of their community in a very big way. And so in each case, what we did is we invited one individual from each of those communities who worked in that art form to basically craft the story of their community and that art form so that you hear a different speaker in each element of the exhibit. And we're basically taking you through their community and talking about that art form. It's a very beautiful exhibit, And there are audio components to it as well, so you can actually hear the artists speaking about these art forms and their value and how they're integrated into their community.
That's great. What are those artists' names?
In Akwesasne, which we looked at quilt making, that was Cherie Bonaparte. In Allegheny, which was the Seneca basket making tradition, which is very diligently trying to be restored, and it's a very much of a challenge, that was Penny Minner. In Oneida, Wisconsin, because, of course, the Haudenosaunee are spread out, and there is a large community in Oneida, Wisconsin. Jennifer Stevens is a traditional potter, and she was kind of our point person or pathway there. Stone carving at Six Nations, which is up north in Niagara Falls, was Dave Farnham, stone carver. And then Grant Jonathan worked with us to pick out select work and tell the story of Tuscarora raised beadwork in his community. He actually lives in New York, but his home is still very much a part of the community of Tuscarora. So those were our five individuals, and they both chose work, selected artists, and then we basically recorded their stories, and you can follow through. That's how the story is told instead of my words.
Could you give us a few examples of some other contemporary Iroquois artists who are making exciting work right now?
Oh, boy. It's all very exciting. I find some of the artists who are working with traditional materials and techniques, but using them in completely different new ways to be very exciting. So, for example, there's Carrie Hill, who's a Mohawk basket maker, and she's using materials and techniques that are over 150 years old in her community. But what she's doing is making wearable cuffs that are very, very spiky looking, and I absolutely love them because they are such a contrast between taking this ancient tradition and making something very contemporary that fits in with, you know, an outfit with leather and studs. It's very punky looking. So I love her aesthetic. I love that she's taking a chance like that. Sam Jacobs is another woman. She is Seneca from Cattaraugus Reservation. Again, she's taking a very old traditional material and techniques, and she is doing something different. She's doing knee-length mukluks with deerskin and fur, but these are like over the top with color and dyed moose hair tufting. And I mean, I can't even imagine wearing these things. I don't think you would ever wear them. So those are exciting artists who are working within that traditional material realm. What I really find myself, I love art that is really provocative, that makes political statements, that really challenge the viewers and make them think. And in that category, there are a few artists who come to mind immediately. Carla and Babe Hemlock, who are a husband and wife team from Ganawage. They're Mohawk outside of Montreal. They do a lot of collaboration. The vehicle for their statements are often quilts and cradle boards, very traditional, very domestic, home-based objects. So they're very approachable, and I think they knock people off balance with these works because people approach these beautiful works expecting them to be very safe. But as soon as you look a little closer at a lot of their work, they are extremely strong environmental statements about fracking, about water issues. They are extremely strong political statements about sovereignty and native sovereignty. And they're just really, they're not only exquisite in terms of the workmanship, but they're so smart. So I love their work. I love Peter Jones' work. He's a potter and sculptor from Cattaraugus Reservation, now living in Allegheny. He is Onondaga. He has tackled some things that I have not seen anyone else get near. His most recent piece that I saw addresses the issue of the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, which takes a lot of courage to make a piece of artwork that is that blunt. It's very well done. He also did a series of death masks that are acknowledging the murdered and missing Indigenous women, of which there are thousands who are undocumented. Christy Belcourt, a Métis artist from Canada, very well known. She did a series called Walking with Her Sisters, which has traveled all over North America, and it has grown everywhere it has gone. And it also, it was an acknowledgement of murdered and missing women. She also did a series that is in the Parliament Building in Ottawa. And they are stained glass windows, which, again, I love because it's just an unexpected material for something as strong a statement. But with these stained glass windows and her series called Looking Ahead, she's looking at the residential school experience in Canada, which was, in some cases, extremely traumatic.
Right.
And the other artist is one more, and that's Kanupa Hanska-Luger. He's a Lakota from Standing Rock Reservation, and he's another artist. He's young and very, very passionate, and I love his work. I hope he lives forever and makes a lot of work.
Thank you so much for sharing all of those names with us. Certainly, I'm going to look them all up, and I can't wait to find out more. And I really encourage our listeners also to look them up, find out more, and support these artists if they can. Now, are there any upcoming events at the Iroquois Indian Museum that you would like our listeners to know about?
We do a Labor Day Festival. We've done it 38 years, August 31st, September 1. There are dancers. There'll be over 24 artists here who will be selling their work. You can buy directly from the artist. You can admire their work and learn more about their creative process. There'll be storytellers, food. The second thing that's coming up, which is only a one-time, you know, we'll only do it this year, is a new exhibit. It's our mini exhibit called Women of Influence. Each block a story. And this is an exhibit of a collaborative piece that was produced by 42 Indigenous women. Each of the women made a fabric and beaded block to honor a woman who epitomized resilience and made a positive difference in their own lives. The production of these blocks and the telling of these stories was intended to be an act of healing for the women themselves. And the blocks pay tribute to, you know, mothers, daughters, aunties, elders, friends, who really stood as role models to these women as they were growing up and struggling with different challenges. And then the blocks were joined together, and the stories behind the blocks were recorded. And so there's a touchscreen computer, so you can not only see the blocks, which are fabric and beaded, but you can touch the touchscreen and hear the women speaking about the inspiration and the people that they dedicated their blocks to. And the opening for that is October 12th, and a number of the women are going to be here present that day. So I would love to see people come and, you know, admire the quilt and just encourage these women for the courage they had to speak about these things.
Mm-hmm. That sounds beautiful. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners before we say goodbye?
I just want to thank you for the opportunity to give a shout out to our museum and remind people that we're only 40 or 45 minutes from the Capital Region. It's a rural area out here, but we're really easy to find and we can get here, you know, straight out 88. And although we are a modest sized museum, I think, you know, we have kind of a very unique story to tell here, and I would encourage folks to come.
You're doing really important work there. Thank you so much for your time, Colette Lemon. I really appreciate
it. Well, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.